The novelist Elif Shafak splits her time between Istanbul and Tucson, Arizona, so maybe it's not surprising that her latest novel, The Bastard of Istanbul, would explore this cultural divide. Here's an excerpt from the book.
Mustafa Kazancı did not so much mind taking refuge in America, but to turn into a foreigner with no ancestors, a man with no boyhood, troubled him. Finding himself more and more distanced from his past, he had eventually cut all ties to it. America was his home now. Yet, if truth be told, it was the future that he had chosen to settle in and call his home, a home with its back door closed to the past.
The Bastard of Istanbul was a runaway bestseller in Turkey. It also triggered a backlash because it touches on one of the most controversial issues in all of Turkey, the Armenian genocide in 1915. Elif Shafak was tried in court and acquitted of, and I quote, insulting Turkishness. When I caught up with her in New York, she was accompanied by a bodyguard and asked that we not talk about the Armenian genocide during our interview. In fact, her American book tour was cut back after the murder of her good friend Hrant Dink, who was a prominent newspaper editor in Turkey.
Well, of course, Hrant's death was a big tragedy, and we all mourn this loss. I don't know if you could have a chance to follow the funeral, but it was amazing. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people poured into the streets, and they marched, Christians, Jews, Muslims, and people were saying, you know, we're all Hrant, we're all Armenians. It was very poignant, very moving. So it created a lot of social reaction in Turkey.
We've read a lot in the last few years about the, I guess it's a crime of being outspoken in Turkey. The novelist Orhan Pamuk stood trial, you stood trial, the charges were dropped against you. But can you explain what you were accused of?
Well, this is the infamous Article 301 that punishes anyone who denigrates Turkishness. But the problem with the article is its vagueness. You know, what does it mean to denigrate Turkishness? It's quite open to interpretations and therefore misinterpretations. So it's also open to exploitation, this law. And it has been used almost always by the same groups of people against a series of journalists, writers, publishers, editors, and sometimes even translators. In that sense, there was nothing unusual about my case, but perhaps in another sense, it was a bit unusual, if not surreal, because this time it was a work of fiction. It was a novel.
There are a variety of interesting things about The Bastard of Istanbul, your new novel. You have an extraordinary array of characters. The essence of them all seems to be that no one, whether they are Turks in Turkey, Turks in America, Armenians in America, American Armenians in Turkey, no one seems to have a very great understanding of their own history. Is that where you began the story?
Actually, my starting point was very simple. I was questioning, perhaps asking myself this very simple, fundamental question: if the past is gloomy, is it better to know more about it? Or perhaps it's better to just move forward? I think it's a question that people do ask themselves. I mean, both individuals ask themselves, and sometimes nations ask themselves. So that was my starting point, this tension between memory and amnesia. Sometimes I have the sense that Turks and Armenians are speaking two utterly different languages. Armenians, especially Armenians in the diaspora, can be very much memory-driven, past-oriented, whereas Turks are just the opposite. We are a very future-oriented society, and we do not have that sense of the past. So it's like we're speaking two different languages, and unfortunately, we're not really listening to each other. We can't really understand each other's concerns.
I love the way the characters leap off the page. From the very beginning, in the rainstorm in Istanbul, I have not been to Istanbul, and yet it seemed to me that I could almost feel the rain falling and the smell of the water and the dirt. It's as though Istanbul for you is almost a character in itself.
That is true, and almost always a female character. I am very much in love with the city. It's an amazing, amazing city and very multi-layered. I mean, if you're the sort of person who wants to live a very sterile, nice and quiet and tidy life, probably Istanbul wouldn't be the ideal place for you. But other than that, I think Istanbul would just fascinate many people, especially artists and writers, because it's an endless source of inspiration.
Well, I want you to tell me a little bit about the women in the family in Istanbul, the Turkish end of this story. Each of these women has something to recommend her, and I was thinking earlier as you were talking about how you began to write this, I had not seen Auntie Banu, the tarot card reader, as a particular favorite of yours, but she is the one who says, who questions, is it simply better to know as little as possible of the past, and even to forget what you know? That's the essential question, isn't it?
Yeah, that's definitely at least one of the most fundamental questions raised in this novel. But let me say a few things about Auntie Banu. I mean, she's a woman who is deeply religious. She's wearing a headscarf. And I think I also wanted to challenge certain premises about women with headscarves while creating this character. She's very religious, as I said. She has her own spiritual world, but she isn't an oppressed woman at all. Just the opposite. She's a very powerful, very strong woman. And the world of spirituality gives her an additional strength. She's connected with the jinni, with the world of superstitions. That always amazes me, to see how uneducated women or women who do not have other means to reach sources of power can still cope with patriarchy by using things like superstitions, spirituality, etc. That's their domain.
Let's talk about it a little, because I think Americans don't understand that at all. We've read a lot about the problems that women have within Islam. I mean, you spent about half of your time in America. Is it something you have trouble explaining to Americans?
Yes, and unfortunately, especially after 9/11, I think there are lots of sweeping generalizations produced about Islam and the Middle East. It is as if, for some people at least, in their eyes, Islam is something homogeneous, almost, you know, monolithic and stagnant. But that's not the case at all. There are different interpretations of Islam. There always were. Just let me give you one example. In Turkish, when I'm talking about a woman who is wearing a headscarf, I have at least a dozen different words that I can use. So there are nuances. You know, sometimes a woman covers her hair because of political reasons, but sometimes for traditional reasons, sometimes for completely different reasons. So I do have different words because there are different types of veil. However, when I'm speaking English, when I'm translating all that into English, I have only one word, the veil. And that word in itself does not explain, it does not embrace that complexity, it does not explain all those nuances. The sheer fact that a woman covers her head, it does not say to us that she's unhappy or that she's oppressed. Perhaps not. Perhaps it's her personal choice. So we should, I think, shatter these sweeping generalizations because it does not help.
Now, a lot of this is also framed in current political terms as a dispute within Turkey over its relationship with the West. Is it really as contentious as that? Is there such a strong feeling that joining forces with Western culture would be a way of denying Turkish identity?
No, I wouldn't say that. Turkey is a country in which Westernization process started quite early. It started in the Ottoman era. And, you know, secularization, modernization, and Westernization, all these three processes went hand in hand. It is very unique in the sense that it is a country in which Western democracy and Islam coexist. And in general, I think people have no doubts about, you know, the direction they want to take. We think we are part of, we're anchored to the Western world. That said, it's also true that there is some backlash, you know, which is attuned to the frustration that people experience with the EU bid. We have been waiting in the waiting room of EU for a long time, for more than 40 years, and some people have suspicions that this is happening because we're a Muslim country. My opinion is things are so interrelated after 9/11 in the world. Hardliners always create more hardliners elsewhere. Whenever Islamophobia, Turkophobia is on the rise in this or that particular European country, it also feeds anti-Western sentiments in Turkey. Xenophobic people create more xenophobic people.
Elif Shafak. Her novel, The Bastard of Istanbul, was a huge bestseller in Turkey.